Tom Gimbel filling in for John Williams on the Wintrust Business Lunch, which means two things. Grab your sandwich, salad, or soup, and stop into a Wintrust and open up a checking account. They don't pay for nothing. And now we have a great guy and successful businessman, entrepreneur, and CEO, Vaughn Moore. Vaughn, how you doing?
Very well, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And probably, I have to say, you know, I like Roy Williams and Dean Smith, but I think you're my favorite North Carolina Tar Heel.
Well, I appreciate that, and that's great company right there.
So you are CEO of AIT Logistics. What is AIT for our listeners?
AIT is a what you would call a freight forwarder. So what we do is we move product all around the world. The best example I would give is it's almost like a travel agent for freight, getting your product from point A to point B. We have 100 offices around the world, and we're about $1.3 billion now.
So you literally are planes, trains, and automobiles without the pillows and the comedy routine.
We truly are.
And so how was your business affected during the pandemic, or was it?
Well, you can imagine with the supply chain disruption that occurred during the pandemic, we spiked in many ways because we were able to provide solutions for our clients where they were not able to get it in normal means. So for us, it's been, I hate to say, almost a blessing in order to be able to provide solutions and gain new clients and new lanes, really, for those clients, too, that we did not have before. You can imagine with capacity being tight, especially tighter maybe than it's ever been in the ocean environment and also via air because so many airplanes were not moving. You've got a major factor that travel internationally not occurring with passengers affected the movement of products coming out via air, especially from ocean, especially from Asia. And the capacity, I believe, is going to remain tight all throughout the rest of the year. Our port congestion is still a major issue. It's contributed to trucking capacity issues. But again, for our company, we've been able to capitalize on that and find solutions for our clients to still get their products where they need to be.
So, Vaughn, compared to other global firms that make products in foreign countries and then sell them in those foreign countries or in those regions, you must have employees in foreign countries, but then you have to get your clients' products out of those countries into other countries, all while managing a pandemic and every country being affected differently by COVID-19 and different protocol for when people got it and then testing. And how did you handle all that? And how many different countries are you guys in?
Well, I believe we are in a total of 41 different countries now. So it was quite an ordeal and continues to be as each country has different mandates and orders for what they allow, particularly with what you're doing in the office from your employee base, but also for just access to certain products as customs clearance and things that are occurring in each country. So something that we've just been on top of. I think you have to have the industry experts that know what they're doing for customs clearance, but also a wonderful human resource group that knows how to be able to deal with those issues in country. And as they change, you're on top of that. So that's something that we've monitored. And we also have a wonderful vendor base that really helps us support all those areas around the world.
Well, if you're going to be kind enough to join us after this commercial break coming up, we're going to take a break to get this thing paid for a little bit. But before we do that, I'm going to leave this little nugget with our listeners that I looked up, Vaughn. Do you know what your approval rating is on Glassdoor?
I do not at this point.
99% approval rating on Glassdoor. I think we're going to come back and we're going to talk Vaughn Moore for president or mayor of Chicago. No one's a bigger, a more loved CEO than Vaughn Moore. So let's talk about this approval rating you've got here. And as a CEO myself, I have to say I'm a little jealous of you, Vaughn. 99% approval rating. I mean, are you slipping something in the Kool-Aid, or why are these people like you so much?
Honestly, it's a humbling thing and a humbling number, of course. But I just firmly believe that if people know you care first, that's what matters. And you can be able to guide and lead them. They know you're going to treat them honestly and fairly. But I think most of all, Tom, is that they know you care. And if you lead with that, I think people will certainly pull for you and certainly follow you if you're guiding them in the right direction. And we've been very fortunate to make some good decisions along the way.
Now, you guys hire people out of college, I think, and then you also have people up through the ranks, up through executives. What's been the biggest challenge for you in finding new talent, especially during coming out of this pandemic and how busy things are? What's the biggest challenge for you guys in AIT?
Well, I think staffing and recruiting is probably one of the biggest challenges for every company just about now. We see it in the restaurant business, of course, and hospitality, and anywhere we go to eat, right? But in the logistics industry, it's still a hot industry, so people do want to get into it, so that's a positive. But I will say that you're paying more for some of the same people than you were 2 years ago. So you have to make sure that your compensation's in line to compete with what's going on in the marketplace. And that is very different than it was pre-pandemic. But at the same time, too, I think that you're getting a better talent pool out there because people are a little bit more willing to look around. So I found it to be pretty interesting in a time where we're able to capitalize. And certainly you know it in your business, Tom, better than anyone. But it's labor is going to be an issue, and staffing is going to be an issue, I think, for the foreseeable future, at least the next 2 years.
Do you find that your employees who've been with you through this crisis and also through your growth, I mean, you guys have grown a lot. You joined the company as an executive in, what, 2010?
2002, actually.
2002.
I'm going up on 20 years. Yeah.
And then when did you become CEO?
Well, I did a leverage buyout and bought the company in 2012 and became the CEO then. I was president just prior to that, 2009.
So that's an interesting thing. So you led a leverage buyout to buy the company from, was it the founders?
Correct.
And then became, obviously, owner and CEO, or partial owner, right? Largest equity holder and CEO.
Correct.
And now you own the company where your former peers used to work, or still work, but they were your peers, and now you're owning it. How did that transition go?
Well, I did bring along my two C-level, my COO, Keith Poland, and Ray Finley, my CIO, in that process, and brought them along with us for the ride. And we've also brought in 2017, as we were climbing the mountain and figuring out if we're going to make acquisitions around the world and grow at the pace we'd like, we could use some capital infusion. So we brought in private equity with a financial partner in 2017. And then we exceeded all those goals so quickly that we exited them out and brought another one in to climb the mountain next here just in last February. So we're just continuing to grow here, finding ourselves at $1.3 billion. We're going to be multi-billions here soon, and we're enjoying this ride. Now, from a peer standpoint, listen, everyone's done very well in this ride, and there was a lot of risk early on, as you can imagine, in doing something like that, but the reward has been great, and we just have a lot of people that have tenure in our company and love what we're doing, and they see that we're doing some things that are game-changing in the industry, so they want to be a part of it.
That's awesome. And I think it's great that it's a Chicago company, and you kept it a Chicago company, or at least
Correct.
Chicagoland area in the suburbs. And I think that really says a lot about you and the company itself and the values that you have, being loyal to where this organization was born. When you look at the company, so many, whether it's the Apples and Facebook and Oracles, they've all tried to get into different lines of business, whether it's, you know, self-driving cars and financial systems and all these things. But it seems like you with AIT, the bigger you've gotten, it's been staying in your lane, so to speak, and just becoming
right.
better at your craft. Is that true?
That's very well said. We have what we call a drive for five that just stays in our vertical areas of expertise, that we are the experts in those spaces, and we stay in those lanes where we don't go chasing or going down rabbit holes of the next hot thing and all the different items that can distract you. And it served us extraordinarily well. And that's really what our customers know us about, because they know that they're going to get the best service in those areas in the business. And they love following us for those reasons.
So now we're going into a little mini segment I call the Brutal Truth segment, Vaughn. So I know you're a cigar guy. So let's pretend that you're sitting back and you're having a victory cigar, after having a great quarter, a great year, and you're talking off the record to your wife or your associates, how scared were you the end of March of last year? Where was your stomach grumblings at that point? How did you feel?
I was extremely scared, as all should have been. The unknown was overwhelming. The fact that we had such little information going on with the pandemic to know what to do with our business. And I'll tell you, the thing that I feared most was having to do something from a layoff standpoint with employees. That is always my biggest fear that keeps me up at night, to have that type of impact on people's lives that we've had so far, and then I want to continue to do it. If we had to face some mass layoff, that I just, from a stomach standpoint, that was probably my biggest issue and biggest fear. I just don't believe in that, because when I look at the names of our employees, when I see our list, I see families having weddings and births and putting kids through college, and those things are really near and dear to me for all of our employees and teammates all around the world. And to me, I just didn't want to ever have to face that. So whatever we had to do to get through it, to not have that situation, that's what I wanted to do. And I'm very proud to say that we never really faced that. We were able to come through it very quickly and start really growing again. And that meant the world to me, to be able to protect jobs. That was first and foremost. But that's what kept me up at night, Tom, and that's what I feared the most.
Yeah, and that was, you know, a little bit of a layup, because I know you, Vaughn, and we didn't do layoffs at our company either. And really, just kudos to you. It shows the type of guy you are, and really what being an employer-friendly or employee-friendly company is all about. Now, I got to let people know that chirping noise is Vaughn's been nice enough to do this from vacation. So he's at a resort. So there's some parrot or something out there saying, "Vaughn's awesome. Vaughn's awesome." And it sounds like just a bird chirping. So
this bird really is enjoying your segment. That's what that is.
Well, I'm going to ask you one last thing. We've got about 30 seconds left. And I know you've got a daughter who you love more than life itself.
Yeah.
How did she handle the pandemic, and how does she handle a father who's a success? I mean, I don't mean successful like from a monetary standpoint, but working as much as you do. Has she been proud of you during this COVID in the company and your career?
Well, the good news is she's been able to participate and be with me through the process. I always share with her a lot about what's going on in the company, and when we're able to meet with different people and involve her in our charities and the things that we do personally and professionally, she's been along with the ride with me here. She's 20 years old, coming July here, and she's been a part of it, so she's got to see it. Now, COVID was really hard on her socially, as it was for any teenager throughout being isolated. But, you know, once you came out of it and you're able to start doing more, she's adjusted beautifully. But she's been a part of it with me, and I know I've got her by my side, and I know she's proud of me, but I couldn't be more proud of her and who she is. That's what matters most.
Now, that's the fun of the ride. So thanks being with us, Vaughn, and have a safe trip back home when you get on the plane, and enjoy the bird and the weather wherever you are. Take care.
Love you, brother. Thanks so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
So speaking of lunch, right? I was eating lunch the other day, and I was sitting next to, I don't know if it was 6 feet apart, but the table was a little bit close to me. And I was listening to a couple of, I don't know, probably 20-something women, 20-something in age, girls, women, the appropriate word. And they were, I don't know, I think it was complaining would be the right word, about how they had to go and buy grooming products again, makeup and hair stuff for coming back into the office. And it was like, ugh, we have to go spend money and do this. And it kind of got me thinking about return to the office and where people's heads are at, because it really seems like people are viewing it as a punishment instead of a perk. And the fact that people didn't have to buy the grooming products for the past 15 months is really the perk. And it's not a punishment to have to go out and do that again. You know, I've got a guy who works for me. He's in his late 30s. And he's balding. I mean, he's got a bald spot before I shaved my head like I had going on. And we always give him grief, like, you know, are you gonna, what are you doing today? You gonna faux hawk? You gonna go side part? Why don't you shave the head? And it was really a difference of, on Zoom, no one can see my bald spot. And now it's like, come on, you're almost 40. Just go with it. And so it leads into what we're thinking as we re-enter. And working from home isn't the entitlement. It's a perk. And I think it's gotten inverted over the past 15 months. And I like working in an office. I like being with people. I like the collegiality of celebrating wins and losses. But I think there's a book called Mindset. And I think it's about winning and losing and how you approach things. And I was actually talking about this at a meeting the other day. And I said, you know, the way you get you separate yourself from complaining is when you're complaining, you might say, you know, I don't like Pete, the producer, right? And that's a complaint. But if you're talking to somebody else, instead of saying that, you might say, hey, how do you feel about Pete, the producer? And if they say, oh, you know what? I like Pete. All of a sudden, it changes your mindset and how you view Pete. And too often we're going in and we're saying, I don't want to go back into the office. Instead of saying to our coworker, how do you feel about going back into the office? Because if they say they're excited, it might change your mindset. But if you lead with you're not looking forward to it and you hate it, now you're affecting their mindset and they feel peer pressure to have to say they don't want to go back in. And misery loves company is really a true statement. And if you're going to have to, whether it's a commute, whether it's 3 days a week, 5 days a week, flexible scheduling, you know, hopefully you live in a city that you like. And the greater listening audience here, even though I know WGN's got 50,000 watts going to the greater Midwest area, most of us are in the Chicagoland area. This is a great city. And I don't know if we have the right mayor, quite frankly, to fix the violence and the problems, but it'll get fixed. We know it'll get fixed. We've got the greatest colleges, University of Chicago, Northwestern, DePaul, Loyola, UIC, and surrounding colleges. And we've got just great businesses that are headquartered here or have big offices here. And so this city's going to bounce back. But we've all got to play our role in it. And whether it's going to the makeup counter at the department store or going to get your hair cut more often or buying a new shirt that you didn't have to buy for a year and a half, it's all playing our role, and we've saved money on the commute and doing that. But I tell you, I had, and I've never talked about this on the air either as a guest or a fill-in host, but in my building in the Loop, we had a sundry store, a convenience store in the lobby. And it was owned by, it was a great American success story. It was an immigrant who had come over from India. And he had this store for, I want to say, 15 or 16 years. And he had a couple other businesses that he had built. And he had this thing from scratch. And he'd be there, except for when he went back to India for like 3 weeks a year. He'd be there every day. And everybody knew Mike. I mean, Mike was a great guy. My kids would come visit me, and I'd take them in to meet Mike. And Mike closed up. Mike closed up in December of last year. And he had been working on a new lease with the building, and no one came back. And he was done. Now, I live in the suburbs of Chicago, and I wear a dress shirt probably 5 out of 5 days usually. And I get them dry cleaned because I couldn't iron if you paid me. And my dry cleaner went out of business. And I remember going in, and she said, you know, to me, Korean immigrants, and they had, and I'd been going there for years. And she said, it's a good thing you came in because next week's our last week to pick up your stuff. And I'm a single guy, so I get being on time to pick up my stuff isn't always in my forte. But I got in there to get my clothes, and she said, we just couldn't keep the store anymore. And there's so many of these businesses. And if all of a sudden you think, well, it's these guys, and I'm not in retail, and I work for a big company, or I'm white collar versus a service business, I got news for you. They're coming for you. It eventually comes back. Look at the Tribune, right? And the Tribune, if you just saw, I think every columnist of tenure and of a generous salary is gone now. They've taken buyouts. And so we've got retail stores that are gone, both in the suburbs to support people who commute and in the city that feed the people. And we've had it. Now, the restaurants are an interesting problem, right? because the ones that went out of business, they'll be snapped up at lower lease rates by new restaurants, and new entrepreneurs will be coming. So while it's sad for the old guys, it's a huge opportunity for the entrepreneur. So it's really a yin and a yang kind of thing on that. But we have these failures, and then we've got White Collar in the Tribune. And when you have no columnists anymore, guess who that affects? Salespeople. And if the salespeople can't sell ad space, whether it's online or in print, then that's going to affect the advertisers. And if the advertisers can't advertise, then they're going to lose customers. You just have, now that you say, oh, but they're going to go to a different model. They'll go to Google. They will. But not everybody has a sophisticated buying machine internally. And they don't, everybody doesn't have the margins that huge technology companies have in order to do this. So you've got a lot of these different problems that I think are worth exploring, and I'm going to be hosting again on Friday, and we'll do that. But I think we're coming up on a commercial break. My bad. As you know, I'm a fill-in, so John Williams would have gotten that right. We're going to go to the Wintrust Business Minute, and here is Steve Grzanich with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. McDonald's first ever loyalty program is coming next month. The fast food giant will roll it out on July 8th after tests began on it back in November. McDonald's already has loyalty programs in other countries, including France. Customers in the U.S. can get 100 points for each dollar they spend. How much it costs to redeem a reward depends on the item. Hash browns cost 1,500 points, while Big Macs will set somebody back 6,000 points. McDonald's is making it a bit easier to earn rewards, as 1,500 points will be given to a customer when they place their first order. Walgreens is now offering $25 in Walgreens cash rewards when you get your COVID-19 vaccine. The rewards will be immediately available after you receive your shot if you have a My Walgreens account. If you don't have an account, you can opt to receive a $25 Walgreens gift card after vaccination. It's the latest incentive aimed at increasing vaccination rates in the U.S. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And it wouldn't be the business lunch without the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, hey, there's a buzz in the air, Tom, because it is National Pollinator Week. No pollinators, no food. Well, not all of it, anyway. We mostly think of bees, but when it comes to moving pollen from one plant to another, there are many other pollinators.
There are.
That's Veronica Hinkey, the public affairs officer for the Madewin National Tall Grass Prairie, which is home to quite a variety of pollinators, including some you may not think of.
Caterpillars, flies. Even though we always think in terms of those pesky flies, they can be very beneficial to the environment.
Oh, and those beautiful monarch butterflies.
If you want to see monarchs, Madewin National Tall Grass Prairie is a great place to go.
And if there's any doubt about how important pollinators are?
The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates that one in every three bites of food that we take is dependent on pollinators.
Getting to Madewin is pretty easy from anywhere in the Chicago area. It's about 15 minutes south of Joliet, and the focus is on returning the land to its natural state, prairie.
There at one time was so much prairie in Illinois that Illinois became known as the prairie state. Now, less than 0.0001% of that original prairie remains.
And the pollinators play a big role in that effort. Madewin has a bunch of programs for the public during this special week and also beyond that. Search Madewin, that's M-I-D-E-W-I-N, and you'll see all the details. And for more information about our important friends, the pollinators, and a pretty cool poster that kids would like to, go to pollinator.org. Chicago Board of Trade's been fairly flat up until the last hour or so, and we are seeing volatility once again. Beans are down 16, corn is down 18, wheat's trading about 5.25 cents lower. At the Merck, it's all green there. Let's change that with lean hogs now unchanged at 103.67. Live cattle are up about 1.6%. Feeder cattle are up 2.5%. Today's Farm to Your Belly feature, it is National Onion Ring Day. Any nominees for Best Onion Rings in Chicago? It's also National Chocolate Eclair Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
And we're going to everybody's favorite reporter, Amy Guth. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you today?
I am great. I am so excited to talk about this one topic that you and Pete had discussed, the airlines and the unions asking the Attorney General to crack down on passenger violence.
Yeah, you know what? I am fascinated by this story too. I think the numbers, when you look at the incidence of unruly passengers, it's really pretty stunning. I mean, a lot of the reporting around this has used the word dramatic uptick and, you know, a dramatic increase, things like that. But let's talk about numbers. So far this year, we're looking in the neighborhood of about 3,000 incidents. In a normal year, it's 100 to 150. That's an average year. So we're talking about significantly more incidents of unruly passengers. And that's everything from like somebody getting drunk on a plane and trying to fight another passenger or a flight attendant, people saying things to pilots. A lot of these have to do with flight attendants enforcing mask wearing and people refusing to do so and getting belligerent about it. It spans a lot of things. I think there's flying during a pandemic there's a lot to that. I'm sure people have feelings about it. Planes were kind of skipping every other seat, some carriers were doing, and then suddenly they kind of went back to full loads. There's a big uptick in travel, things like that. There's a lot of different things converging, right? And suddenly we're seeing this unbelievable number. I'm fascinated by this because we've all seen those videos that go viral, you know, of somebody whipping out their phone when someone's just being belligerent and inappropriate on a plane. But the airlines and the flight attendants union and a couple of other professional organizations are saying, hey, we don't want this to be just a civil matter. That's how it's usually dealt with. They're saying, hey, we want some criminal charges attached to this. If you're interfering with a flight attendant, if you're interfering with a pilot before takeoff or after takeoff, if you're being belligerent and we have to make an early landing or we have to have officials waiting for you at the jetway when we land, that should be criminal charges. And so that's really kind of the message they're trying to send. So far, the FAA has kind of said, we're standing by our zero tolerance policy. We're in this conversation. We'll see. So no firm conversation. But this letter they sent to AG Merrick Garland asked for more from the Department of Justice. So I'll be watching that to see what shakes out there when we're talking about just these huge numbers. About 1,300 of those 3,000 have really elevated to, you know, a bigger level of, wanting to pursue charges or pursuing fines, things like that. And so, you know, it becomes a safety matter at that point where you want to make sure that everyone's safe to travel and people aren't feeling like they can just act any kind of way on a plane.
Well, I have to think a lot of it also has to be federal versus local police and jails and things. Where do you prosecute it, right? Is that if somebody were on a bus in Chicago and they were being belligerent to the bus driver, yelling and screaming and hitting a passenger, right, the CPD would be there and arrest them. But when you're in, where are you going to put, were you going to send somebody from Omaha to LA flight and send them to Gitmo? I mean, where do you do with these people?
Yeah, there is that piece of it too. And the FAA said that they're working with local law enforcement because that's kind of who you would deal with at the end of the jetway. Your plane lands and you've been acting belligerent. Well, that's who's going to be waiting for you would be, you know, the local law enforcement. So it does get a little confusing about, well, whose case is that? What's happening? So I think this letter to the Attorney General and to the Department of Justice is saying, hey, we need help on a federal level because this is really not a good situation. It's not getting any better.
And I think the only good news I can make of all of it is there is no discrimination. It's black, it's white, it's Hispanic, it's men, it's women, it's old, it's young. Everybody, and you see these videos on Twitter, everybody's turning into a lunatic on an airplane, no matter what race, ethnicity, or gender they are.
Yeah, I think right now, whatever it is that's making people act out is certainly, I don't think it discriminates at all. I think there's a lot of different kinds of people acting out in different ways. And, you know, it's been a stressful year and a half. So I think maybe that's just boiling over. Who knows? But it'll be interesting to see where this resolves.
And so the other topic that I thought was great was McDonald's is slashing the fast food dollar menu and they're going to pricier meals. So you get, they didn't used to have dollar menu, you know, decades ago, they didn't have a dollar menu. Then they go to it, but it still was never viewed as expensive. Then you give people a dollar menu, and now they think regular McDonald's is pricey. And it's like, wait a second, the dollar menu is a deal. Now, it's crazy, right?
Right. So a couple of things happening with McDonald's today. One, as you heard earlier in the news, that the loyalty program is coming out in July. All the timing of this is really interesting because at the same time, you know, that's a move to collect more data from customers to help convenience, things like that, hopefully trading convenience for data. But at the same time, McDonald's, KFC, and a couple of other fast food companies are trying to scale back on that dollar menu and moving people towards more like family style meals. things in the $10 to $30 range, where you could get, you know, maybe that's several fries and a big thing of chicken nuggets, or several burgers and, you know, those kind of those like the Crave cases at White Castle. It's kind of like that, trying to move people to that. Part of that is the issues we saw with supply and demand and meatpacking. A lot of that is ongoing issues with chicken, because the chicken sandwich war is back, things like that. There's all these really fascinating issues kind of converging right now in fast food. So they're trying to drive, you know, just to keep their profits healthy, they're trying to drive people towards these more expensive items. At the same time, they're introducing more stuff that wouldn't necessarily be like a family pack, but it'd be more, you know, the premium item, as we're seeing these chicken sandwiches rolling out everywhere you look. Some of those are moving up in the, you know, $7, $8 range, whereas, you know, at McDonald's, that's going to be like $3 or $4. So it looks like there's a lot of movement in the pricing strategy of fast food menus that we're going to see, I think, throughout the summer and into the fall, if not a bit longer.
I am not afraid to admit I love a nice McDonald's hamburger. However, I think maybe if they're going to do a family meal, it's like instead of a toy, you give like a bottle of Pepto-Bismol. Or are you going to cut a hamburger in quarters? Like, I mean, I get a box of chicken, a bucket of chicken. You know, I'll have the wing. And yesterday we were talking about wings turning into thigh restaurants and all this other stuff. But
yeah.
I don't know how McDonald's does a family meal program to split up a Big Mac and a thing of nuggets, right? What do you do?
Maybe it's like a... Yeah, maybe it's like a 10-pack of quarter pounders or something. I don't know what that would look like. We'll see what they come out with.
Yeah, maybe we need Michael Bloomberg to run McDonald's, and he'll eliminate all the big sodas. But I think that's it for today, Amy. So thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.